Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And welcome back to Meeting of the Minds. Today I'm here with the great Sean Dedine, Rutgers wrestler, 40 under 40, entrepreneur, sales expert, you name it, he's got it. Sean, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and thanks for the kind introduction.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's take it from the top. Let's go through your wrestling career journey to Rutgers and how that led you into the business world.
Yeah, I mean, I had a little bit of a weird college experience. I actually, and a lot of people don't know this, and I'll try to keep this part short because it's a little long-winded, but I actually went to Montclair State out of high school to wrestle, Division III school, and I was recruited there. And August 1st or August 2nd, after high school had ended, I got a call from the head coach that they dropped the wrestling team. So I was in a weird spot. I started wrestling when I was 4 years old. Started playing football when I was 7 years old. I played through high school. So it was kind of too late to transition schools or leave or any of that stuff. And so I called up the head football coach, found his phone number online. I don't really know how I found it, but anyway, I got him on the phone and I was like, "Hey, I'm Sean. I played football. I wrestled. This is the story. I'm going to school and I'd like to be on the football team." He was like, you know, probably confused how I even got him on the phone. And he's been there for like, he's still there now. I think he's been there like 30 something years. He has one of the most wins in college football history. And, he was like, "Sorry, we're full. You know, camp starts in 2 days." So I got in my car and I drove from Bayville where I grew up to Montclair State. And I knocked on his door 2 hours later. I'm like, "Hey, I just called you." And he's like, "I don't know why you drove all the way up there. Like, we're full." And I was like, "Hey, I'm already here." I was like, "I'm a really good long snapper. Would you mind just watching me snap the ball a little bit?" And so I guess to amuse me, he sent me out on the football field and snapped the football maybe 20 times or so for him. And he watched out of his office that overlooked the football field and then called me back into his office, gave me a packet of papers, and I went to football camp. So if he doesn't let me on the team or I don't drive there, and no one told me to do that, I just kind of did it. If I don't do that, I don't know if like the rest of the story keeps going. I might have just kind of ended that there. So I don't give Montclair State football a lot of credit. They probably don't even know I played. I snapped. I was the long snapper. That's about the extent of my college football playing. I played a little bit of defense in some games where we were blowing the other team out. But without that, I probably don't continue. So anyway, I went there. I wasn't really loving school. I met my girlfriend, who's now my wife, Molly, who you know. And she graduated high school, and she's going to Johnson & Wales to wrestle in Rhode Island. So I'm like, "They have wrestling. I'll just call the coach and I'll do what I did again." Called the coach. He basically said like, "Hey, if you get into school and you can walk on the wrestling team." So I did. I got into school. I followed my girlfriend, who's now my wife, to school. I wrestled there. I became the starter. I went like 31-7. I lost in the conference finals to a kid I had beaten earlier in the season. And in that conference, only the guy who won the tournament went to the national tournament. So he actually lost. I won the tournament. They have a true wrestle back for first, and we never wrestled. And he beat me in the true wrestle back for first. he took third in the country, actually. So I was excited. I was like, I'm right there. I'm going to stay here. I'm happy. I'm doing good in school, that whole thing. And then my high school wrestling coach, who I'm really tight with even today, got, you know, in touch with some people at Rutgers when Coach Goodale became the coach. And I luckily got put in touch with him, and I became part of that first recruiting class that he had. And that kind of was the changing of the whole story, because there's just such a different commitment level, not obviously from the athlete from Division III to Division I. And Division III athletics is serious, and it's hard, and you still got to put in a lot of time to be successful. And I don't want to make it sound like I'm diminishing that, because I spent 2 years as a Division III athlete. But the commitment level from the university and from the donors and from things outside of the program itself, it's just a different level. So a lot of those people, and the commitment level from the coaches, a lot of those people made a big difference in how I am today. So Rutgers really played a big part of that. I'm glad I kind of had that journey and saw a lot of things and had some challenges that I had to overcome.
That's awesome. And I feel like that's something that people really need to take notice of, coaches and teachers, that when you see a kid who's a hustler and a go-getter, that is few and far between. That's a rare breed right there. And I notice when you look at the most successful people, that's what they have in common. They will go to someone's house. They will knock on a door. They will pick up the phone and make the call.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, right, I didn't think much of it. I was like, I want to play football. So I got to go up there and convince this guy to play football. And but looking back on it and like interviewing a lot of people and talking to candidates and even like talking to my athletes that I help assistant coach at a local high school, it's not the first thing in their mind isn't like, oh, I need to do this. So I need to go do it.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. That's phenomenal. And then talk about how you've transitioned from Rutgers then into business.
Yeah. So I think that first story is important for later, because I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't grow up with, you know, a lot of money, and my mom and dad had very modest jobs, and we had, you know, what we needed. Right. But like, you know, it was like, hey, you're going to go to college and you're going to get a job. And that was kind of like what was going to happen. So when I graduated college, I didn't know really what, and this seems like a common theme when I talk to other athletes and when I mentor some kids right now, it's like, I identified myself as a wrestler, period. Like that's who I was. It's what I was. It was everything. Right. And when I graduated college and wrestling's over. And so I'm like, well, who am I now? And what I realized doing some self-reflection, and this took time, this didn't happen like on a Tuesday night. Right. But I realized that what I really loved about wrestling was the camaraderie and the coaches and the relationship and the competitiveness and the individual accountability with the team atmosphere. So when I started looking for jobs like that, a lot of people pointed me in the direction of sales. And my father-in-law specifically, he was the first person to tell me, you want to be in sales. And at the time, right, I'm like seven, you know, I guess at the time I'm 20. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. Sales felt like sleazy. Like you think of like weird car salesman, insurance salesman, and those things aren't sleazy, but like, that's what you think when you don't know what you're talking about. And so I didn't want to be in sales. I thought sales was like trickery. Right. And then I realized like everything's sales. And so I liked that, because it felt like wrestling again. It didn't matter if you were a freshman or a senior. It didn't matter if your mom was on the PTA or your dad was the coach. We were going to wrestle. One of us were going to win. All the things I did right or didn't do right were going to be exposed. And I only had myself really to blame. And then I was kind of in control of my own destiny. And that was what I liked about sales originally, was I could make as much money as I wanted. I could get promoted as fast as I wanted, if I was really in an environment that promoted the best person being the best person, not the most senior person being the best person. So, Yeah, I mean, I use a lot of that.
That's awesome. Now, talk about the influence of your father-in-law. Obviously, a big success in his own right, and a guy who is always like a mentor for you. That's huge.
For sure. I guess a little part of that story, too, is I went to senior prom with my girlfriend, who's now my wife. So we've been together for almost 15 years, and we went to college together. So like we've never broken up, or we've been together from the time I went to college until today. And so my father, he was a really hardworking guy. He actually worked two jobs. He just retired October 4th from his jobs. And the one job was my mom had left, and that's another story for another time. But my dad basically could have kind of like crawled in a hole and died, so to speak, right? Because she left and she had her own problems to deal with. And my dad had me, my brother, and sister. And at the time, I was the oldest. I was 15, I believe. And my sister was, say, 12. My brother was, say, 9. And he had to go to UPS to get benefits. And so he went to UPS, and they were only hiring people to load the trucks. So at like 52, this guy went to UPS, and he had to load the trucks from 2 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock in the morning. And then he went and worked all day, his regular job, just to have health benefits for me, my brother, and sister. So, like, I got work ethic and, like, just, like, go do it. Like, stop. No one cares. Stop complaining. Figure it out, right? There's not going to be someone there to, like, hold your hand and make it better for you. So I got that part from him. And then I meet my father-in-law, who, like you mentioned, really successful guy. He came here from Ireland when he was, say, 7 or 8. He was the youngest of 7, and they didn't have anything. And he's become an extremely successful person in every respect, not just financially, right? But, right, he's still married to his wife. His daughter, right? And then, you know, our grandkids and hobbies and friends and all his sisters and brothers and all those kind of things. The family stayed together, all those different areas that you could define success. And so I watched what a couple different decisions and a couple different thoughts could do. And I'm like, all right, like, it didn't seem that unattainable, right? I'm watching this guy who's like super normal, and I'm having harder conversations in my kitchen with my girlfriend's dad than meeting with business owners. Like, you found out, like, they're just normal like you. So, like, if you went in there and stopped putting these people on this pedestal and just approached the conversation from a very normal aspect, it was pretty easy to build relationships. So, you know, I was lucky. I had a couple of good mentors early between my dad, my father-in-law, my high school wrestling coach, Mike Bischoff. Then along the way, my Johnson & Wales wrestling coach, the Rutgers wrestling coaches, Leo, Goodale, those guys, right? So I've been lucky that I've had really good mentors come into my life at like the right time. And not everybody gets that, but I think that's a big reason I've gotten to where I am right now.
Yeah, that is absolutely huge. And then talk about how then you started your own business, because that's always a scary step.
Yeah. So I figured we would get to this point where we're talking about business, right? And so I don't know how other people started their businesses or what kind of pushed them over the edge. I never wanted to start my own business. I didn't think, you know, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to work for a company for a few years and then I'll start my own thing. I didn't know what I wanted to do, quite frankly. So I worked for a company for a long time, about 6 years after college, give or take, maybe 5 years, whatever it was. And I got fired from that job. So I don't really tell that story a lot. Obviously, it's not something that I'm super proud of. But when I look backwards at the things, you know, there was a lot of things that I think could have been done differently on both sides. And I've taken time to reflect on that and saw, hey, what didn't I like about that situation? What did I like about it? What could I have done better? So I got fired, long story short. And whether I agree with how it went down or not is a different topic. But I get fired and I go get a job. And I'm at a small company and I'm watching this guy run his business, and he is the nicest guy going, like, great at what he does. Really, really nice person. And I'm watching him run his business, and I'm like, man, like, I think I could do this. Like, it didn't seem, again, kind of like what I was talking about my father-in-law, right? It didn't seem that unachievable. And it didn't seem that, not that it's not hard, but it, like, if you were willing to drive to Montclair and ask the football coach who's been doing it for 30 years to be on the football team, how hard is it to like work for yourself if you're going to work for somebody else? So I was there for a while and I'm like watching this guy run his business. And I really admired that he had the guts to go out on his own and start his own business. And I was like, you know what? I'm 27. I guess I was 27 years old at the time. I'm the youngest I'm ever going to be. I have the least amount of responsibilities I'm ever going to have. And if I don't go, and I had my son at the time was 10 months old. My wife didn't work. She stayed home with the kids, which was her choice. She wanted to do that. So I'm like, you know what? I should just, if I'm going to do it, I should just do it. And I talked to a couple people that were really close to me in my life about it. And I was expecting everyone to say, hey man, like, don't do that. You got a good job. You just had a kid. You're crazy. Don't do that. And I went to my wife first and I told her about it, and she, her reaction was like, you should absolutely do that. That's a great idea. So I'm like, all right. Then I went to her father and I told him, and she, it's his only child, right? Is my wife. And I'm expecting him to say like, hey, don't do this. And he was like, you should absolutely do that. That's a great idea. Then I went to my business partner, Len, who at the time, you know, obviously we've been friends since we were little kids and wrestled together growing up and that whole thing. And I was like, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? And he was like, you should definitely do that. So like, I started to get some, you know, people pushing me in the right direction, saying, hey, sounds like you have a game plan. It sounds like you have the knowledge. It sounds like you want to do this. You know, and it took me probably 2 years after the time I had lost my job at the other company until the time I started my company to be ready to do it, to think I wanted to do it, to, you know, all those things, right? It wasn't like, hey, a year after I'm doing this, or I got fired and I'm mad and I'm doing it tomorrow. You know, I didn't want to do it at first. I just went and got a job and I was like, you know, what do I want to do? So it took some time, but when I looked back at like what I thought I was all about, and if I really think I'm a hard worker and I really think I'm good at these things, and I miss the camaraderie of being in a big office and managing people and hiring them and training them and developing them and all those things that come with sports and coaching and training, that I think people forget, like being a manager in a business is being a coach in a sport, or a captain in a sport if you've never been a coach. It is no different. It's leadership. It's caring about your people. It's pulling them in the right direction and things like that. And if those are the things I missed and I really thought I was talented, then I should really just stop talking about it and put some action into play. So I decided to open the business August 1st, 2017. And lock on wood, we've been really lucky. We've grown really well. We have 18 employees now. We were ranked in the top 250 privately held companies in New Jersey this year by NJ Business Magazine. We were voted the top 5 places to work in New Jersey by the same magazine. So all those kind of things, they reaffirm the things you're doing right, and they make you feel good. But it's really just about the people. I mean, the thing I'm most proud of is every single person we've ever hired besides one person still with me 3.5 years later. And I don't think many businesses can say that, especially many staffing or sales businesses.
Yeah, that's a really big deal. I mean, because that turnover is a lot, very common, right? Especially in your field. Usually turnover is really common.
The first 6 months as a recruiter, like it's either for you or it's not. So, I mean, that's been big for us. I think about any business, or think about any sport, really. Like, you know, there's some freshmen, say basketball or football, right? They come in, they make an impact right away, and then they go to the pros. But like, think about freshmen in wrestling right now. They're coming in, they can win NCAA titles, they can compete with guys on the world stage. So like, the people are coming in, they're more polished, and you know, they want chances to be really successful. So for me, I like, you know, I want to get people on my team that are hungry, that want to win. And then if I can coach them up and I can care about them better than anybody else can, I think I can get us where we want to go.
Definitely. Now, if you're taking someone under your wing, what kind of mindsets, mandatory mindsets, must they have? And what are maybe some common mental mistakes to avoid?
Great question. I mean, for me, when I interview somebody, I want to see if discipline plays a big part of their life, because there's going to be a lot of times where you're really not motivated to do what you want to do, right? Like, I work out regularly, and I was a heavyweight in college, and I had a big belly, and now I'm not a heavyweight in college, and I have a belly that's not as big as it used to be, you know? And I try to stay in shape, because just like sports, I can only give as much energy as I have, right? So if I eat better and I stay in shape and I get to bed at the right times and I wake up and work out, all that impacts how I think and how I can move all day. So from a mindset standpoint, I'm thinking about discipline and how that person's maybe been disciplined in areas of their life where they've done things they didn't want to do for reasons they didn't really feel like doing it, but they got through it and got it done. I think that plays a big part, because quite frankly, staffing, the job is not sexy, right? It's not, especially in recruiting, right? It's a lot of grunt work. You're scrubbing through a lot of resumes and a lot of people and making a lot of phone calls. You know, my average recruiter makes somewhere in the neighborhood of 11,000 outgoing phone calls a year. Now, not everybody answers, right? But they're dialing the phone about 11,000 times a year. they're making between 30 and 40 placements a year, right? So if you talk about 11,000 phone calls to get 30 people jobs, that's a lot of no, you know? So the discipline to make those calls every day. I look for stories, you know, like I have in my personal life, whether it's the football coach or my mom or getting fired from my job, where like it would have been very easy and socially acceptable to a large group of people to kind of crawl and die and feel sorry for yourself and give up for ever or for a period of time and make a bunch of excuses as to why that would be okay. But I look for stories where that happened and the person didn't. And then specific in that story, there's usually somebody that helped them in there that could take no benefit from it. So if I see somebody that's been able to overcome that obstacle and then identifies, hey, I didn't do it on my own, someone helped me, and then they have some loyalty to that person, I feel like those are traits that I do really well with. I can take that person and get them up. And then it's somewhat like I have a lot of athletes, college athletes that worked for me. And or especially, I think probably everybody in my company has played at least a high school sport. But I have several college athletes. And I just think the mentality of perseverance and resilience and discipline, I think those are the biggest things, right? So I look for those to come out in their stories, because the mindset, like I feel like in an interview, if you're smart enough and you've done enough of them, you can kind of like tell me what I want to hear in many cases. But it's hard to make up a personal story that actually happened to you. So I try to make the interview as personal as I can. And some people let me write in and they end up working here and we have great relationships. And some people are like, hey man, this guy's asking me questions that are too close to the heart and I don't know him yet. And that relationship is never going to connect with me personally. And I don't think it connects well with our candidates, because you got to learn about these people very quickly. And so, I would tell you that if you had me narrow it down, the discipline and the resilience and the loyalty would be the three things that I'm digging for on interviews the most.
Great. Great. And then what kind of things would you say people need to avoid? Mental hurdles, mental mistakes that people make? We always call them the mindset red flags, right? So what would you say some of those mindset? Yeah.
I think people just give up too quickly. Like, you know, I hate to keep kicking back the stories that I just told, but like when you're looking at that football thing, when they dropped the program, I could have been like, man, that stinks. Guess I'm not playing a sport this year, even though I played a sport every year since I can remember being a person. Guess this is the year it's not going to work out for me. I was like, you know, I just, something in me was just like, no, I'm going to go play football now. That's the next best thing I can have. So I think just like not just giving up, because, you know, and that's a big thing in sales, right? For people listening, or, you know, and you know this from your company, right? Like, just because someone said no, that doesn't mean no forever. And that doesn't mean, you could have caught them at a bad time, in a bad mood, on a bad day, when their business isn't doing well. So like, when I hear no, okay, like I'll try, let's get to the next thing. Like, when should I try you, right? Get to the next thing. So I think just not taking no for an answer, and just, you know, you can be respectful about it, but like, we're going to call you back and we're going to move on and we're going to get back in touch. So that's number one. I think another hurdle is everybody feels like the next thing they do, like whether it's a promotion at a job or a new job, is big and scary. And what I've found is every time I've done anything, whether it was go from Division III sports to Division I sports, go from a company, from a recruiter to a salesperson, or to a director of business development, or running my own company now with one employee, running it with 20 employees. It's just more, right? So it's like, you start to talk to people, and I have clients that do $20 billion in revenue that build, you know, thousands of homes all over the country. When you deal with their executives, they're people too. So if you treat them, not being afraid of the moment, or not being afraid of the person, and just treating them like, probably like they want to be treated, like a normal person, and feeling like you belong in the conversation, I think those are things people often feel like maybe they're not good enough. And that's probably what I was doing, right? When I was asking my friends and Molly if I should start my own business, like seeing, am I good enough? Do they think I'm good enough? Like, because obviously I cared what they thought, or I wouldn't have asked them, right? Subconsciously. So I feel like some people feel like they're not good enough to do the next thing or have the next thing, or they don't deserve it. And my opinion on that is, if you put in the work and you know you do, then you do deserve it. You deserve it as much as anybody else does. So that's, I think, a big thing that I would tell people, like, especially younger people, is like, when you get to a new company, like, you belong there. They hired you, so you're there. So now act like you're there, be there, like that whole thing. You know, I think it's very relatable to sports.
That's awesome. A lot of tremendous information there, and I hope the people that watch, because we're pre-recorded right now, they're taking notes, because these are all little gold nuggets of information. Tell the story real quick of, so the connection I linked you up with and the phone number, it was missing a digit. Talk about that, and I think that also really encapsulates being a hustler and a go-getter. Tell that.
Yeah, that's actually a funny story. So Gene has been very nice to introduce me to some connections he knows. And there was a architecture firm that I was trying to build a relationship with, and I was having trouble getting people on the phone. And I saw Gene was, you were connected to, you know, someone over there from growing up. And so anyway, I got, she sent you an email, said, hey, have them call me. Here's my phone number. And it didn't have the last digit on the phone number. So, right, if it was my phone number, it's, whatever, it's 839, and then it didn't have the last number. So I called you and you didn't answer, and then I called into the company and she wasn't there at the time. So I'm like, man, I really want to call her right now. So I called every number, and of course I started at zero and worked from zero to nine, and obviously it was number nine. So I had to call literally 0123456789, and like almost on every other number somebody answered, and I don't remember the name offhand, but I think it was Christine. And I'm like, hey, it's Christine, this is Sean. So, and some guy would answer, be like, no, this is Frank. You know, you got the wrong number. And I had to do that 8 times. And of course, on the last number, she answered. But it kind of broke the ice because I told her that story. But I guess that's the same thing as, you know, I could have waited for you to email me back. I could have waited for her to email me back. I could have waited 2 or 3 days. Things could have changed. She could have got busy. We could have not connected. I could have forgotten. But instead I was like, you know what, screw it. I'll call the 9 numbers and get the person on the phone. So yeah.
That is awesome. And I mean, that goes back, I think back to the story of what you were talking about with your dad about just find a way. Don't make excuses. If you want it, go get it, make it happen.
For sure. I mean, think about that, right? Like, not to air out all my dad's laundry. He actually just got remarried a couple weeks ago. So, but not to air out all his laundry, but you know, him and my mom split up when I was 15, she left, and they were together for like 20 years. Right. So, and they were together for like 7 or 8 before they had gotten married. So like, it was very reasonable for him to be sad and not want to do the things that he wanted to do. And trust me, he was sad. Right. And I'm sure he did a lot of things he didn't want to do, but he had responsibilities and he had people that relied on him, you know, my brother, my sister and I. And so he just did it. I don't know why he did it. I'm sure nobody told him to, you know, looking backwards, because I know the people that were around. So, you know, I that makes it easy for me when I'm just like, today stinks, or today's really hard, or my life's not that hard, like in comparison to what really hard things could be, right? I do a lot of challenging things, and I gotta serve people in my life and take care of people in my life and, you know, hold up my responsibilities. But in the grand scheme of things, like I'm a very lucky guy in a lot of respects. So like when I think about how hard I got it, and then I think about my dad going to work from 2 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock in the morning, and then working the whole day after from like the last 16 years before he could retire, 17 years before he could retire. I mean, that's pretty, it makes it easy to get up and just go to work.
That's it. That's another key mindset that I notice with successful people, especially during the whole pandemic. They're like, yeah, it's tough, but it could be a lot tougher. Like, I don't have it nearly as bad as these people. And I think a lot of people don't look at it that way, but I'm noticing a trend with highly successful people. They say it could have been a lot worse.
You know, and you know what? Let's talk about the pandemic for 2 seconds real quick. When that happened, like, I'm a business that's 3 years old. That stinks, right? Like, we're right in the thick of, like, getting going and like really starting to like take really big steps in our business. And then like, we got to throw the brakes on, and that stinks for me personally. But when I look back on it, like, I'm like, when that happened, I'm like, all right, financially, we're good. We got our employees. We game plan what we have to do, right? And then we work to hit those things so that we can make sure that we didn't lay anybody off. We didn't cut anybody's hours. We gave most of our employees raises. We gave all of our employees their expected commission that they didn't even earn during that period of time, because in sales, you rely on your commission for your pay. So me and my partner immediately put together a game plan, and we're like, all right, if we hit these things, these minimum things that, like, right now we just got to hit these things, we're going to stay alive. We're going to be able to pay our people. We're going to be able to grow, right? We're going to still be able to grow a little bit, maybe not as much as we wanted, and maybe a little stagnant here and there, right? But, like, these are the things that are going to get us better. So with that, right, like, I actually, from the time that happened through May 10th, I didn't drink. And I drink whenever, like everybody else. I have a glass of wine on the weekend, or I go out, whatever. I didn't drink at all. I worked out every single day. I ate a really clean diet. I was like, I need to stay. I can't get sick. I have a wife and kids. I can't get them sick. But, like, I have to be on for the next 3 or 4 months in this pandemic, because I need to keep in touch with all my clients, and I need to see how they're doing and where can I help them where they're not spending money with me. We had several clients that we helped set up their, my partner's really good IT, you know, and a lot of operational stuff. A lot of them had phones they didn't even realize linked to a Zoom account that they can actually get virtual stuff from home. So we found out a couple of our clients had that, and he set it up for them. We had a couple of people that unfortunately had layoffs, and they didn't want to lay off these people, but they had to for their business. And so instead of just saying, hey, you're laid off, I feel horrible about this, see you later, they put them in touch with us. And a couple of those people were actually able to get jobs. One woman, she lost her job on a Friday, and she started working the middle of the following week. So, like, there was no gap in – so servicing our clients another way during this period of time and just keeping in touch with them. And then internally, we had a lot of downtime because we didn't have as many openings as we normally have. So we really went back to, like, the basics and started training our employees. So every night from 5 to 6, me or my recruiting manager, Connor, or one of my BDMs ran a recruiter development meeting 4 or 5 nights a week for all of our team to get better and reaffirm the basic things we do. So we put together a plan to say, hey, we're going to get our butts kicked anyway for the next 4 months. So let's just get our butts kicked the least we can and get everybody better. And if we keep in touch and really care about our clients in a really bad time, and not just care about them like, hey, you got any openings? Can you give us some money type of thing? We're going to build stronger relationships. Our recruiters are going to be better. And then when everything starts to come back, which at some point it's going to, the world's going to end, we're going to be in a good spot because we cared about people more than just can they make a placement with us. So,
right. That's huge. And that is the mindset you need to have. Talk about, okay, so who do you service? Where can people find you? How do we point more people your way?
Yeah, great question. So who do we service? So we're a staffing and recruiting firm, and we have different types of hiring. So we have our executive search, which is more your C-level, vice president-level employees where there's an executive search. We have a temporary or consulting-based search where if you need people for a temporary period of time. And then we have our permanent search, which is a majority of our business. So we service real estate development companies, construction management companies, architects, engineers, and environmental consultants. So anything, if you see any construction project, whether that's a road, a bridge, a highway, a town, a building, whatever it is, anybody that's on that job, with the exception of labor, we fill those job openings and place those people. Civil engineers, all types of architects, estimators, project managers, superintendents, those kind of things. Separately from that, we have a support service division that two girls that work in my office, two first people I hired, actually, Deanna and Nicole, they handle our support services division. So inside of those companies and in some external companies, they have financial operations, marketing operations, human resources, administration inside of those companies, and they handle all those positions for our clients. So anything accounting, finance, marketing, human resources, administration, and then anything construction related, we're your guys. And then you can find us anywhere, on LinkedIn, you find us on our website, actstaffing.com. And really, we try to have a heavy presence, which we take a lot, actually, I'll say, from you guys, you and your brother. We take a lot of stuff from you guys. We try to have a heavy presence on LinkedIn. We've just got more involved with Instagram and Facebook. And at first, I was kind of against it. I'm like, hey, our clients really aren't on Instagram or Facebook. But what I failed to realize, and I think I realize now, is that our candidate pool and the people that we're going to work with to place in jobs, when they're looking at what we're all about and who we are, they're on Instagram and they're on Facebook. And the girl in my office, Leanne, who runs all of our social media and our LinkedIn and edits all of our articles that we put out. We put out articles every other Wednesday on best practices about interviewing and things like that. And she does an awesome job running all that. So I'm lucky, you know, the same way I had mentors, I have really talented people around me that care about what they do. And so I think that's a big difference internally why we've had some success early on is everybody really it's cliche. I hear everybody say we feel like a family and everybody's bought in. But like we've been around for 3.5 years. We've grown a lot and every employee we have is here and working hard. So I feel very lucky that I have a lot of people around me that care about what they're doing and care about us.
Yeah, and that's the sign of a successful manager right there, that you're able to cultivate those people during the difficult times, also to have an eye for what other areas might they be strong at and allowing them freedom to flourish in those areas. And overall, everyone wins. They win. The company wins. It's great. Awesome.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we have talented people now. Why am I going to tell them what to do all day long, right? That's why we hire them.
That's right. That's right. Any links you want me to send, just let me know. I'll throw it in the show notes on YouTube. We'll get it up there. Sean, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. We'll talk soon.
All right. See ya.
All right. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.